Imagine a junior engineer on your team, right? And they just finished this massive API migration in, I don't know, like 12 minutes.
Which is just wild to even think about.
Totally wild. And as a manager, you are absolutely thrilled. I mean, it's a huge win for sprint velocity, right?
Yeah, on paper, it looks amazing.
Exactly. But what if a whole new wave of research is actually suggesting that by saving that half day of, just struggling through the code, you just actively prevented that engineer from ever becoming a senior?
It's a scary thought. But it fundamentally changes how we have to think about productivity. Because, well, the time is saved today, sure. But the cognitive development required for tomorrow is just completely lost.
And that is the exact premise of today's deep dive. We're synthesizing a massive stack of recent sources to really understand this shift.
Right, there's a lot to cover.
There really is.
Yeah. Huh.
We are looking at a brilliant August 2026 article. It's titled, "Don't Automate the Apprenticeship Out of Engineering."
A very strong title.
Yeah, and we're combining that with hard data from a longitudinal survey of developer habits, plus an analysis of 400,000 Claude code sessions.
Which is just a massive data set.
Huge. And we've also got this fascinating workforce economics paper from the NBER. So our mission today is to figure out how you avoid losing an entire generation of human expertise to the very real allure of automated convenience.
It's the defining challenge for engineering teams right now, honestly.
Okay, let's unpack this. The core paradox we are living through right now is that entry-level work historically produced two entirely distinct outputs.
Right, there were two separate goals.
Yeah, output number one was the shipped feature, the closed ticket, the functioning widget. But output number two was a smarter engineer.
And that second output is the invisible one.
Exactly. And the terrifying part is we are fiercely protecting that first output, but we are completely erasing the second.
Which is why the central article hits us with such a blunt realization right out of the gate. The author writes, and this is a great quote, "The craft survives, the on-ramp does not."
Wow, the on-ramp does not.
Yeah. And what's fascinating here is that if you think about your own career, engineering organizations rarely sat down and designed a deliberate pedagogical learning system for juniors.
No, definitely not. It was trial by fire.
Exactly. We relied on what the author calls accidental apprenticeship. We just gave juniors bounded, low-risk work.
Like fixing a tiny bug on a button or
All
something.
right. And they inevitably made mistakes. Then the seniors corrected those mistakes because the product had to ship. And through that sheer messy repetition, those rules slowly turn into deep pattern recognition.
So the apprenticeship was just an accidental byproduct of production.
Yes, but now that the production is automated, the accident is over.
Man. Okay, the theory makes sense, but I mean, if you are managing a team right now, you probably want to see the hard data. You want proof that this cognitive decline is actually happening.
You want to know it's not just some philosophical worry.
Right. So let's look at that randomized study from 2026 regarding asynchronous programming.
Yeah, this data should honestly be a massive wake-up call.
Walk us through it.
So the researchers asked developers to learn a completely unfamiliar, highly complex asynchronous programming library. And asynchronous programming is notoriously difficult.
Because you're dealing with promises and callbacks and things firing out of order,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. You have to keep multiple concurrent states in your head. It requires a really deep mental model, not just rote syntax.
Okay, so it's a heavy cognitive lift.
Very heavy. So half the developers used AI assistants and half did not. And the bombshell here is that the developers who used AI scored 17% lower on a twist of the concepts they had literally just used to complete the task.
17% lower, that's a huge drop in retention.
It is. And the worst learning outcomes, I mean, the absolute rock bottom retention, came from the participants who fully delegated the task to the AI.
So they just treated the AI like a black box.
Precisely. They just pasted the prompt, got the code, and moved on.
No critical thinking involved.
None. Conversely, the participants who used the AI more like a Socratic tutor, asking it conceptual questions to test their own understanding, they retained a lot more.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, but the overarching trend in the data proves that handing off the execution damages retention. This aligns perfectly with that massive Claude code study we looked at.
Right, the one with the 400,000 sessions.
Yes, across all those sessions, the data shows human expertise absolutely still drives the high-level planning. But the actual execution, the typing of the code, and building that local mental map of the code base is being completely handed off.
And the longitudinal survey backs that up too. It showed 82% of developers are now spending significantly less time writing code and way more time on what they're calling supervisory engineering work.
Right, directing and correcting the AI.
But wait, put yourself in the shoes of a project manager facing a brutally tight sprint. If I get perfect greenlit code from an AI and all the tests pass, I honestly don't care if a human physically typed it.
You just want the feature shipped.
Exactly. If the feature works and the customer is happy, why is this actually a bad thing?
It's a bad thing because you are falling victim to the trap of plausible output.
Plausible output?
Yeah. It is probably the most dangerous phenomenon in modern development right now. The issue is that plausible output now arrives before comprehension.
Okay, what does that look like in practice?
Well, a junior uses an AI and produces a senior-looking artifact.
Mm-hmm.
The pull request is incredibly tidy. The explanation attached to it sounds wildly confident, and like you said, the tests all pass.
Right, looks flawless on the surface.
But you have to ask why the tests pass. Because very often the tests pass because the exact same AI system that fundamentally misunderstood the complex business requirement also wrote the tests around its own misunderstanding.
Oh, wow. I see.
Yeah, it's grading its own flawed homework.
So the code is structurally sound like it doesn't have syntax errors, but it is solving the wrong problem, or it's ignoring edge cases that only exist in the real world.
Exactly. So the junior gets a gold star for producing a feature quickly, but they haven't built a senior mental model. They learn absolutely nothing about the trade-offs involved or why that specific architecture was chosen in the first place.
And if plausible output is tricking the juniors, just think about how it is impacting the seniors who have to clean up the mess later.
It's completely draining them.
Yeah. The sources highlight this massive 2026 bottleneck study. They looked at nearly 23,000 pull requests.
That's a huge sample size.
It is. And they found that when juniors used AI to write code, they submitted much larger changes. But because those changes were massive and lacked underlying context, they received 4.5, two times more review comments from senior engineers.
That is just a staggering amount of extra work for the reviewers.
And on top of that, those PRs stayed open 5.1, six times longer.
This raises an important question. How does a junior ever learn to supervise a highly complex machine if they have never built the machine themselves?
Right. You can't edit what you don't understand.
Exactly. If all they are doing is acting as a pass-through mechanism for AI-generated code, they aren't learning the friction. They don't see the edge cases or the cascading consequences of a bad architectural choice.
They are just generating a massive volume of review work that basically crushes your senior talent.
It completely breaks the workflow.
So since the data proves that treating AI as just an escape hatch from thinking creates this massive bottleneck, we clearly have to redefine how work is assigned on our teams. We have to separate getting things done from getting people trained.
Which is a huge structural shift.
It is. The author argues we need to explicitly define two different modes of working: production mode and learning mode.
And that distinction is just non-negotiable now.
Why is it so rigid?
Because if you run an organization and you don't explicitly state which mode a specific task is in, the intense delivery pressure of a typical sprint will always force your team to default to production mode.
That makes sense. Everything is always on fire, so you just want it done.
Always.
Okay, so in production mode, the goal is simply to optimize for a verified outcome. You automate the toil as aggressively as possible.
Right. If a machine can do it safely, let it.
Exactly. Like if an AI agent can safely complete a routine dependency update across 50 repositories, let it. Nobody on your team needs to retype boilerplate code just for educational theater. You get it done and you move on.
But learning mode is entirely different. Learning mode optimizes for cognitive ownership.
Cognitive ownership. I like that.
Yeah, the goal isn't just a closed ticket anymore. The goal is to build what the author calls judgment.
And how do they define judgment?
They define it brilliantly as compressed experience. It is the ability to seamlessly combine context, historical evidence, and downstream consequences when the written rules are incomplete.
So it's not just a title you get after 5 years.
No, judgment isn't just a badge. It is the physical, neurological rewiring of your brain that only happens when you make a decision, watch it fail in the real world, and update your mental model.
Let me throw an analogy at you just because I think it makes this super clear for anyone listening who, you know, drives a car.
Okay, I love a good driving analogy.
So Think about navigating a brand new city. Production mode is blindly following the GPS on your phone to get to your destination as fast as humanly possible.
You're just waiting for it to say turn left.
Exactly. You get there, sure. But if your phone dies the next day, you have no idea where you are. You completely outsourced the spatial navigation to the machine.
You learn nothing about the city itself.
Right. But learning mode is looking at the map beforehand, predicting the route in your head, putting the phone in the glove box, taking a wrong turn, realizing you're going north instead of west, and figuring out how to get back on track using actual landmarks.
It's messy.
Super messy. And it takes significantly longer today, but tomorrow you actually know the city.
That is a phenomenal analogy because it perfectly illustrates the mechanism. And because the nature of the work is changing, the fundamental unit of apprenticeship in engineering is shifting. It is shifting from the keystroke to the decision.
That is such a huge reframe.
It really is. The author argues that spec review is the new code review. The thing you have to fiercely protect on your team is understanding, not typing.
So the junior doesn't need to physically type out the syntax.
Right. A junior doesn't need to type every single line of code the AI could produce. But they must own enough of the reasoning behind the architecture that a wrong line generated by the AI causes immediate cognitive dissonance for them.
Like they need to feel that it's wrong in their gut, even if it looks perfectly formatted on the screen.
Exactly.
Okay, so we know we need to embrace learning mode, but how do we actually do this on a Monday morning when the sprint is just breathing down our necks? The source lays out a very practical framework for a new apprenticeship loop. It's six moves. Let's walk through what a junior's workflow should actually look like step by step.
Let's do it.
So it starts the moment they get a ticket. Move one is frame before generation. Before they are allowed to touch the AI.
They have to frame the problem first.
Right.
Before the AI generates a single line of code, the apprentice must write the problem frame. What are the core assumptions? What specific behavior needs to change? What is the most likely way this request might be misleading?
And then what?
Then the senior engineer reviews that frame.
But this makes so much sense because it completely counters anchoring bias. If you wait until the code is already generated, the apprentice is just going to inherit the AI's first interpretation as if it were absolute fact.
And fixing a misunderstanding during the framing stage is incredibly cheap.
So much cheaper than rewriting a massive pull request. Okay, move two, review before reveal. Let's say the frame is approved and the AI generates the code. Human nature dictates the junior is just going to glance at it and hit approve. How do we force them to actually engage with it?
By enforcing a rule where the junior must review the AI's code before the senior steps in.
Okay, so they have to critique the machine.
Yes, this forces true cognitive engagement. The apprentice has to write down their assessment, mark risky assumptions, identify missing edge case tests, and state definitively whether they would approve it for production.
And they do all this blind.
Completely blind. Only after they do that are they allowed to see the senior engineer's review of that exact same AI-generated code.
Oh, that is brilliant.
The actual lesson doesn't come from just reading the senior's notes. The deep learning happens in the delta between the two reviews.
Right, comparing the two.
What did the senior notice immediately that the junior completely missed? What signal was real and what was just noise?
If the senior reviews it first, the apprentice just learns the answer. But if the apprentice reviews it first, they practice producing the answer.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Move three, diagnose before regenerating. What happens when the AI gets it wrong and fails a test? Because my reflex is just to hit the regenerate button.
Which is just using the AI as an escape hatch to avoid thinking?
Exactly. And that's why the framework enforces a strict rule. No retry without a prediction.
I love this rule.
If the code fails, you cannot just click regenerate and hope the machine gets it right the next time. You must diagnose it. You have to name the broken assumption and predict exactly what specific test will fail if your diagnosis is correct.
You have to put your flag in the sand.
Yes. You commit to a theory before you let the machine try again.
If we break down the cognitive mechanism here, it's all about productive struggle. Learning requires friction. Regeneration makes fixing the syntax cheap, sure. But forcing the diagnosis is what turns the failure into actual retained knowledge.
It stops them from just spinning the slot machine.
Exactly. And this leads us to move four. Manufacture practice, not answers. This is an incredibly powerful concept. The same machine that is destroying the old practice field can actually be used to build a vastly superior new one.
Wait, how exactly does that work? How do we manufacture practice if they aren't writing the basic boilerplate anymore?
You leverage the AI to intentionally calibrate the struggle.
Okay, give me an example.
So you can prompt an AI to generate specific counterexamples to a junior's logic. You can ask it to simulate an incident replay by releasing system evidence in stages, forcing the junior to troubleshoot a live outage in a perfectly safe environment.
That is wild.
You can even have the AI generate 3 plausible pull requests, each one perfectly flawed in a different subtle way, to test the junior's ability to spot architectural errors.
You are essentially using AI to build a danger simulator.
That's a great way to put it. You're giving them the experience of breaking production without actually taking down the company's servers. You do it at a scale and cost that no traditional corporate training program could ever match.
Okay, I love that. But eventually the senior does have to step in. Which brings us to move 5, narrate the override. What happens when a senior looks at technically valid code from the AI, but rejects it because of real-world operational issues?
The framework requires the senior to narrate the override. In any engineering team, seniors reject valid code all the time.
Sure, maybe it creates too much database coupling, or maybe a legacy migration is still in flight and this new code would clash with it.
Right. Historically, that intuition remained completely silent. It was just a gut feeling the senior had, and the junior just saw a rejected PR with no real explanation.
They just knew it was wrong, but not why.
Exactly. But in an agentic workflow, the senior must narrate exactly why. They have to explicitly write down the operational signal that changed their decision. This fundamentally turns invisible, tacit intuition into a documented institutional context spine.
A context spine. It stops that incredibly valuable judgment from just disappearing into the ether of a single person's approval click.
It codifies the intuition.
Okay, the final move, move 6. Increase consequence gradually. How do you know when this apprentice is actually ready to take on more? The author argues it's not just a single binary ladder of promotion. You measure their readiness across 4 distinct dimensions.
Which are crucial to understand.
Right. First is reversibility, meaning can the action be undone cleanly? Second is blast radius, meaning how many customers or critical systems does this actually affect?
Third is observability.
Yes, meaning how quickly will our monitors tell us if it breaks? And finally, recovery cost, meaning how agonizing is it to fix once it's completely broken?
Which means an apprentice might safely own a high-volume, massive code change if it has instant rollback and 0 blast radius.
Mm.
And they can do that long before they are allowed to own a tiny 2-line configuration change that can't be reversed and won't show symptomatic failure for a month.
Because the consequence is so much higher on that tiny change.
Exactly. You do not promote an apprentice based on the calendar, and you certainly don't promote them based on how much code their AI agent can generate. You promote them based entirely on the hard evidence of their judgment.
This entire loop framing, predicting, diagnosing, narrating, it sounds incredible for an individual team. It makes total sense if you want to build sharp engineers.
It does.
But let's zoom out for a second. What happens when entire corporations look at their quarterly spreadsheets and decide it's just cheaper to hire fewer juniors altogether? I mean, if AI makes a senior engineer twice as productive, companies might look at their entry-level classes and shrink them from 100 juniors down to 10.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is where it stops being just a workflow problem and becomes a systemic crisis.
This brings us to that workforce economics paper.
Yes, the 2026 NBER paper. The economists call this a training market failure. It is essentially the tragedy of the commons, but applied to human talent.
Okay, so like if everyone shares the pasture, but nobody wants to pay for the upkeep, the pasture eventually just dies.
Precisely. Imagine Company A spends years and immense resources explicitly training a junior engineer using these deliberate moves we just talked about. They intentionally slow down their sprint velocity to build this junior's judgment.
Right. They take the hit on productivity for the long-term gain.
But then Company B, who spent absolutely nothing on training, just swoops in and poaches that newly minted mid-level engineer with a higher salary. Company A absorbs all the financial and temporal cost, and Company B gets all the benefit.
Wow. So the open market literally incentivizes nobody to train. Every individual corporate decision to cut junior headcount and just buy a better AI tool looks completely rational to the board of directors.
Yes, on a quarterly spreadsheet, skipping the training is always the logical move. But collectively, across the entire industry, it means the shared talent pipeline is slowly, inevitably emptying out.
It's a race to the bottom.
It is. AI just makes the temptation to buy the tool and skip the human development stronger than it has ever been in the history of knowledge work.
So how do we actually fix that? If you are a leader listening to this right now, how do you justify the cost of slowing down to your executives?
By fundamentally recognizing that senior time is capital. Mentorship cannot just be invisible volunteer work that your seniors do after hours when they are already burned out.
It has to be prioritized.
Exactly. Evaluation capacity, the ability for highly trained humans to actually check the machine's complex work, is a hard, heavily funded constraint. Leaders have to put development capacity directly on what the author calls the AI operating ledger.
What does that ledger actually look like in practice? Like, how are we changing the metrics?
It means we completely stop measuring lines of code written or the raw volume of tickets closed. Those metrics are useless in an agentic world.
So what do we measure instead?
We need to start measuring the quality and the acceptance rate of apprentice-authored specifications. We need to meticulously track defect detection rates during a junior's first pass reviews.
Ah, tracking how well they spot the AI's mistakes.
Yes. We need to measure how often an apprentice's prediction of a system failure actually aligns with the real outcome. We have to make the financial investment in human capability visible enough on the ledger that short-term delivery pressure cannot just secretly erase it.
So what does this all mean? Synthesizing all of this, organizations face a very stark, unavoidable choice. You either spend the time and the money to build human evaluators right now, deliberately and painfully, or you wait for the bill to arrive later.
And it will arrive.
Oh, and that bill is going to be astronomical when the few remaining humans who can actually spot an AI's highly nuanced, plausible mistake are totally overwhelmed, burn out, and leave the company. You cannot just expect the pipeline to magically produce senior engineers if you have actively destroyed the on-ramp.
The bill always comes due. And the companies that survive the next decade will be the ones who realize that AI didn't replace the need for human judgment. It made it the absolute most valuable asset in the building.
All right, let's wrap this up. AI is undoubtedly eliminating the accidental apprenticeship we have relied on for decades. But as a result, human judgment is more vital and drastically more scarce than it has ever been.
The paradigm has totally shifted.
It really has. The defining question for the next decade of engineering is no longer who writes the code. The question is, who will know when the code is wrong? So I want you to look at your own workflow tomorrow morning. Are you using AI as a tutor to intentionally stretch your understanding and test your mental models? Or are you using it as an escape hatch to avoid the friction of thinking?
It's a crucial gut check.
Next time you use AI for a complex task, force yourself to write down a prediction of the outcome before you hit enter. Commit to a theory. Build that internal map.
And as you do, consider this. If an entire generation of engineers learns to evaluate complex systems purely through AI-generated, perfectly simulated failures rather than organic, messy, real-world human disasters, will they develop a massive systemic blind spot?
Wow.
Will we end up perfectly trained to catch a machine's logical, predictable errors, but completely defenseless against the deeply chaotic, deeply irrational ways that humans actually break systems?
That is a brilliant, slightly terrifying thought to leave off on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the future of human expertise. Keep questioning your assumptions. Don't let the machine do all your thinking, and we will catch you next time.